TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Dr. John Campbell, Coronavirus Update, and How Not to Treat a Coronavirus Fever. On March 23, 2020, as global confirmed corona cases top 400,000, Donald Trump stresses the need to reopen America and ease up on stay-at-home orders. At the same time, India announces a 21-day lockdown across the country, and UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson, after weeks of inaction, announces a strict lockdown all across England. Just before this news became public, Dr. John Campbell, in his daily update on his YouTube channel, explained how important the stay-at-home orders are. Dr. Campbell is a retired nurse teacher based in England. For a quarter century, he has taught nurses and lay people and healthcare workers in Asia and Africa. In 2007, he expanded to YouTube with his personal and casual approach and homemade slides and time-tested wisdom and ongoing research. He currently posts at Campbell Teaching on the spread of the coronavirus. This segment was posted hours before the UK and India were closed down. Dr. John Campbell.
Well, welcome everyone. It is Monday, the 23rd of March. Now, if I asked you to do some great heroic thing to save someone's life, like splash through the ice and take out a drowning child from the lake, or run into a burning house or something like that, a lot of you would do that because people naturally care for other people. When they see this immediate danger, they're very likely to respond positively. And you have that opportunity today. Today you can save a life. And for a lot of us, all we have to do is stay at home. Unless you're an essential worker, all you've got to do is stay at home, and that can save lives. No great hard thing, but by going out, you could be spreading infection and bringing people's lives into danger. So we're at the stage now where globally, everyone needs to be 2 metres apart from each other. Now, in my country, for example, the United Kingdom, these measures have been announced for the past few days, and many people have been obeying it, but quite a few people haven't. So the government is probably going to have to bring out a legally enforced stay-at-home shutdown law, which is a pity, because there's nothing wrong with walking your dog outside or something, as long as you're on your own, or with people who are in your house. But there's everything wrong with going on a crowded train or going to a market, a busy market. So it's a pity that people have not complied with this. They just don't seem to realise the importance of it. I've just told you how easy it is to save a life. Now, coming on to some important things for today and what it means. Now, I was listening to an interview this morning with Jerome Kim, Korean gentleman, American Korean, Director General of the International Vaccine Institute. So we can assume that this guy is a scientist and well-informed. He was saying we should know if a vaccine works in 12 months from now. So that is March 2021. He said approval could probably be fast-tracked in a few weeks after that. And 1 to 6 months after that, supplies would be available. So what this means is, realistically, we're looking at injecting vaccines into arms, not before late summer 2021. Now, we're hopeful therapeutics will come out. But until then, all we've got is these non-pharmaceutical interventions. Everyone has their role to play. Absolutely everyone. In preventing the spread of this infection. In saving lives. We are in a stark situation all over the world now. So a number of official number of cases, official number of deaths, official number of recovered. Now, why is it that South Korea seems to have done so well? These numbers have been bobbing around here. Slight increase, of course. There was a cluster in Seoul last week, I think, at a call centre. But basically, South Korea has managed to level out the curve. This all-important curve. Because make no mistake, for Europe and the United States, this curve is going to carry on increasing. For the next week or more, we don't know. Depends on how effective our measures are. but the number of cases are going to increase. The number of deaths are going to increase. This is what's going to happen. The degree to which they increase and whether they eventually level off depends on the way that we all collectively behave to isolate ourselves from each other. So South Korea has been quite successful. So test, treat, isolate has been their strategy. And the massive amount of testing in South Korea has paid off. They can see their enemy. In the United Kingdom, we can't see our enemy because we don't have enough testing. Many free test centres were established in South Korea, so people knew if they were infected and would go home and self-isolate. Super spreaders could be identified. Cluster spreaders could be identified and then isolated, and those around about them quarantined. It was interesting, this guy was saying this morning, this Jerome Kim was saying, many companies in South Korea are led by scientists, and they made kits to test this at an early stage and had them validated. So quite a lot of scientific awareness in the business community in South Korea there, which probably led to some proactivity as regards kit testing kit preparation. And by and large, the population obeyed social distancing, unlike my country are not all doing at the moment, unfortunately. And again, China, some restrictions are being lifted in Wuhan at the moment. This was the very epicenter of the whole pandemic. They had 81,000 cases, which is more or less leveled off. And this number of deaths, about 4% of deaths. So again, their curves have gone down. The number of new cases are now well down. So these are, we would have to say, success stories. We need to learn from South Korea. We need the testing, we need the isolation, we need the quarantining, we need the education, we need the hygiene. We need all of these things. And we need to obey the social distancing. This is now a matter of life and death, and still people are going to markets and messing around buying silly things. We're in a war situation here. It's time to stop enjoying yourself outside for a period of time. Italy, the curve is still going up, and quite a few countries and quite a few areas in the United States are just a couple of weeks behind Italy. Distressing scenes from hospitals, of course. Death rate is absolutely horrendous. Now, we have looked at reasons for this in the past, and I'm going to be looking at some a scientific paper about this later on today, as soon as I get time, as to why the death rate in Italy is so high and what we can learn from that. But at the moment, I just want to mourn the tragic situation that is this death rate in Italy. Now, part of the reason here was, in contrast to South Korea, there was a lot of spread before the virus was detected. So basically, the virus had free reign in Italy for quite some period of time. Initially, we thought that there was serious cases in Italy because we were getting deaths at a fairly early stage. But actually, looking back, it's because the virus had already been spreading in the community and had built up this momentum. Just so much illustrating the need for proactivity. Italy's reacted dramatically, but they weren't aware of this spreading that was going on, resulting in a large amount of community spread. But now they've banned any movement inside the country and closed all non-essential businesses. So pretty well an economic and movement shutdown inside Italy. And given that people in my country and other countries, such as Germany, aren't fully complying with the voluntary lockdown, it's just a matter of time until there's legally enforced lockdowns in my country and Germany and other countries, I feel sure. Let's hope it's not necessary. There's a dramatic change in people's behaviours today, but we're going to see. So Germany, the death rate is incredibly low. And again, we've looked at reasons for that. It is encouraging, but I do expect the death rate in Germany to rise. I do expect the death rate in Italy to start falling as well. And we do expect the death rate to balance out at about round about the 1% mark, according to my chief medical officer. So we're still expecting that to be roughly where we're at or going to be at the end of this pandemic. And it will end. Spain, a lot of new cases, a lot of new deaths. Indian curfew extended. India taking this really seriously. I've expressed my anxiety for India, Bangladesh, Pakistan before, and it's still there. Very fortunately, I think this is delaying things, but This is going to be hard to stop in India. Hong Kong ban on foreign arrivals and transit, and the governor, Carrie Lam, is trying to ban alcohol sales because she said it alters people's behaviour and makes physical contact more likely, which is true. So hopefully that'll be passed in Hong Kong soon. And we had Dr. Tedros from the World Health Organization yesterday telling us to cut down on alcohol anyway to boost our immune systems. So that message remains in place. If you're drinking alcohol, cut back as much as you possibly can, and actually ideally stop for a period of time. And of course, if you're smoking, I think you understand the importance of stopping. New Zealand, 102 cases. Probably more than that in reality. Non-essential businesses and schools have to close. Prime Minister Ardern, the worst case scenario is simply intolerable. It would represent the greatest loss of New Zealanders' lives in our history, and I will not take that chance. And of course, the famous Anzacs in the First and Second World War suffered horrendous losses. And it looks like it could be worse than that if the non-pharmaceutical interventions are not taken seriously. But it seems they are, and New Zealand is getting on top of that. South America is not too many cases in South America. Brazil is a bit of an exception, quite a few cases in Brazil. But South America on the whole being very proactive and instigating large-scale national measures, which is encouraging to see. And there is no doubt in my mind at all that will significantly slow the spread of the virus down, giving a lot more time to prepare. Now, my apologies to all Colombians. Yesterday, I mispronounced your country. It's Colombia, not that's not a U, it's an O. but the reason I put it on is not so much the amount of cases, but the civil unrest was very concerning. 23 deaths in prisons. These aren't deaths from the virus. These are deaths through violent unrest. So concerning. My concern for institutions remain. But very glad to see the proactivity taking place all over Latin South America. Now, the United States has come to the party a bit late with its interventions, but it is coming now. A lot of cases. Current death rate is 1.2% in the United States. On the official figures, but of course testing is only just getting going in the States. And but when greater numbers of people are diagnosed, that can bring that percentage down. But then of course some deaths have occurred from COVID-19 that haven't been recognized as deaths from COVID-19, which would tend to increase that. New York is actually running short of some aspects of medical equipment. The National Guard is being deployed in New York, California, Washington State, to set up large-scale, military-style medical stations, basically large mobile hospitals. Ohio, Louisiana, Delaware, broad restrictions. But basically, this is going to have to apply to all of the United States. We have to accept that life is going to change for some weeks into the future, if not months into the future. We'll get through it. But this is not a time for normal behaviour. We want much better behaviour than normal. Now, the United Kingdom, cases increase. Our testing has become quite lamentable in this country. We don't have the testing facilities. We don't have the personal protective equipment to look after those people that are doing the testing. We've been promised an antibody test, and that cannot come soon enough. Hopefully that will just be a prick of blood that people can basically do at home on their own, and we'll know if they've had the infection. So under-testing, under-reporting in my country, unfortunately. Now, just before we finish today, just a little bit of epidemiology here. Number of new cases in the population at risk is the attack rate. Now, what this is going to be, we don't really know. Globally, it could be anywhere between 50 and 80%. It could well be, in many areas, it could be 50% over the next 12 months. It is possible. I'm just hoping the social isolation distancing measures keep that well down. Because 2021, when we should get this vaccine, and the problem will be sorted when we get the vaccine. We need the vaccine, but we haven't got it yet. So the attack rate it could well be that more than half the world's population are going to get this COVID-19 infection. Let's hope that's a pessimistic estimate and that the huge scale changes that we are seeing now are effective and the number is massively less than that. Now, the people that are particular risk, this is the data from China. So the Chinese studied the first 72,000 cases that were registered here and produced this paper, The Epidemiological Characteristics of an Outbreak. Now, their case fatality rate was higher in men than women. And the fatality rate did increase with age. But today there's been some alarming reports from the UK of younger people who are really quite ill with this disease. So it's not... it's not that simple, but these have been recognised as figures. This may be due to great amounts of male smoking in China. That's not entirely clear yet. Now, the death rate in people with significant established cardiovascular disease was 13.2%. Diabetes, presumably that depends on the degree of control. I believe diabetes is very common in China, 9.2%. Again, significant chronic respiratory disease, the death rate was 8%. This is in people that got the infection. This was the case fatality rate, hypertension, cancers. And of course, anyone that's immunocompromised is going to be at risk. And I've recently expressed my grave concerns about people with underlying HIV infections as well. And this was the age profile of death rates in China. The younger age groups, the death rate was 0.2% case fatality rate. As we got older, the case fatality rate increases. So someone 80 plus who got COVID-19 infection had a nearly 15% chance of dying. 70 to 79, an 8% chance. 60 to 69, 3.6% chance, going down with younger people. But as I've said, we are already seeing significant cases in younger people in the UK. So these are only indicators of what happened in the Chinese situation. I would expect the overall cases in the UK to follow a similar pattern, but as of now, we don't know. This is a novel virus. There's still so much we are still learning.
That was Dr. John Campbell's daily update for March 23rd, 2020, with a gentle reminder that COVID-19 is not just a disease for elders. Dr. Campbell's YouTube comments, often more than one a day, cover the public health aspect of the corona epidemic, and he gives specific advice on the behavior of the virus and how treatment might affect it, all the while saying that he's not our doctor. The following commentary deals with the treatment of fever. Since fever has become the most important first-line diagnostic indicator of a COVID-19 infection, it may be frightening for anybody to discover that we're running a temperature. Many might react by searching for a pharmaceutical to bring the fever down. Dr. Campbell says that that could be the wrong thing to do. Here are his comments on specific advice given by the French Minister of Health, Olivier Véran. Here's Dr. Campbell.
Well, good morning, and you are most welcome as always. Now, it's Monday the 16th of March, and I want to start off today with what is a very important announcement that I believe has the potential to save many, many lives. Now, for a long time, I've been teaching that fever is a natural adaptive response. When people have a fever, the viruses do not replicate quickly as they normally would. And that's the same for viral infections and bacterial infections. And also, when someone has a fever, the immune system is going to be stimulated by that fever and is going to combat any infection more effectively. So what I'm saying basically, I'm talking about adults here, is that fever is generally a protective mechanism. It's good to have a fever when you're sick. It makes you feel absolutely awful, but it's helping you combat the infection. Now, I've been a bit reluctant to go down this path in the past, but evidence now is starting to accumulate. So the French health minister, who is also a doctor, a neurologist who specialises in neurological conditions. So this is a French official, himself a neurologist. Right, the taking of anti-inflammatory drugs such as ibuprofen and cortisol could be a factor in aggravating the infection. Right, there we have a simple statement. I agree with it 100%. Now, what he's talking about here is anti-inflammatory drugs. Now, there's two types of anti-inflammatory drugs that I'm aware of. There are steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, and there are non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. So, inflammation is the body's response to injury and infection and insult. And we can reduce inflammation sometimes when we need to, because that's clinically important. And sometimes it's clinically important to do that. And to do that, we can use steroid drugs, which are strong drugs, which are similar to a hormone produced by the body. Corticosteroid drugs, drugs produced by the adrenal cortex, or same as hormones produced by the adrenal cortex. That doesn't matter. So that the steroid or cortisol type drugs, they're the strong steroid type drugs. And in the UK, certainly they're only available on prescription. But then there's this whole other group of drugs called non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, NASIDs, non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. And they are anti-inflammatory. They're not as anti-inflammatory as quickly as steroids or as profoundly as steroids, but they're still anti-inflammatory. And they're available over the counter. This is the issue. So what we're saying is non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, NASIDs, are probably going to make the infection worse with COVID-19. And every home will have this. If you look in your medicine cabinet at home, I'm sure you've got some. Now, these drugs, what are they? Non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, what are they? Aspirin, ibuprofen, naproxen, diclofenac, and there are a couple of trade names that you get for ibuprofen, sometimes called brufen in this country. So what you need to do is look at the medicine that you're considering taking, and on the packet it should say if it's a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug. And if it's any of these, then it's looking like the French authorities are saying don't take these drugs, and I agree. Now, I am not your doctor. I cannot tell you what drugs to take and what not to take. But if I had this infection, there is absolutely no way on this earth I would be taking a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug to bring the fever down. Absolutely no way at all. Or anyone I was responsible for, I would strongly advocate against in my own care or looking after family members or whatever. I would strongly advocate against taking any non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug if someone has a fever caused by COVID-19. Now, this chap here, head of pharmacology at Toulouse Hospital, again, French authority. Just mark these words well. Anti-inflammatory drugs increase the risk of complications when there is a fever or infection. So if you want to get more complications, take non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. If you don't want to get more complications, this advice is do not take non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, or indeed any other anti-inflammatory drugs. Now, some people are on the strong anti-inflammatory drugs called steroids because their doctor has told them to. So, for example, in this country, we commonly give one called prednisolone for asthma, or we sometimes use it for other inflammatory conditions such as polymyalgia and other inflammatory disorders. Now, if you're taking prednisolone, I would not give you any advice whatsoever. Let me make that clear. You must call your doctor to ask for advice on that. But if you are taking that medicine, the data coming out of France here is showing that it could be associated with complications. And certainly the over-the-counter non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, these people are advising against, and I agree with them 100%. Now, the French authorities are saying paracetamol should be taken if you have a fever. Now, I'm not saying I agree with this. Not by any means am I saying I agree with this, because we've just talked about the fact that fever is an adaptive response. So I'm not telling you what drugs to take or what drugs not to take. I'm not your doctor. But When I have a fever, I try not to take paracetamol. Because I'm an adult, if I've got a fever of 39 degrees centigrade, I'm going to feel absolutely awful. 39.5, even hotter than that. I'm going to feel absolutely awful. But I know that my immune system is working better because I'm at that fever temperature. I know that my body has increased that fever temperature quite deliberately. It's not an evolutionary or pathophysiological mistake. It's common to many animals who also get fevers if they have infections, indicating that it's been around for an awful long period of time, this febrile adaptive response. So what these French doctors are saying, that if you've got a fever, don't take non-steroidals, but you can take paracetamol, which goes by the name of acetaminophen in the States. Sometimes we call it Panadol in England, Tylenol, whatever you want. Tylenol is the common name in the States. It reduces fever, but it's not anti-inflammatory. So look at what medicine you are taking. Now, with paracetamol, of course, it's very toxic if you take too much. So you've got to carefully follow the correct dose. So the French authorities are saying, if you've got a fever, don't take the non-steroidals. But if you've got a fever, consider taking paracetamol. My understanding of the theory is that your immune system works best at febrile temperatures. Therefore, I would avoid taking paracetamol, even though it means you feel pretty bad for a period of time. That's what I do. Again, I have to cover myself in these videos. I would advise you to call your own doctor for advice. But there's no question at all in my mind that the immune system is working better, that the viruses are much more uncomfortable when we are at febrile temperatures. If people all around the world are taking non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, which are so readily available, evidence is starting to accumulate that that is going to increase the rate of complications. And of course, one of the complications of COVID-19 disease, coronavirus disease 2019, one of the complications is death.
That was Dr. John Campbell. He recorded himself at his home in Northern England on March 16, 2020. And I'm presenting his advice on fever here while most of us are still cool-headed enough to talk to doctors or nurses to know what's best for us when we experience fever. I want to credit Dr. Campbell's daily friendly and learned and low-tech commentaries on the corona epidemic on his YouTube channel, Campbell Teaching. That's CAMPBELL Teaching. One word. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look at the newest programs or the podcast page. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening.